It's every 5 to 8 seconds. I mean, you focus on your driving, but you're checking around you constantly. And you can do the same thing just walking from one building to the other here. There's potential avalanche danger as you walk from building to building here. Roof avalanches. This is sort of a guy thing. Sometimes their mind writes checks that their body can't cash.
It's kind of a Top Gun thing, right?
Oh. Experts. A lot of people call me an expert. I'm not an expert. I know a few. And experts are often overconfident and wrong. Okay, here's where I'm going to want you to help me a little bit. There's some syndromes we should avoid. And one is the sheep syndrome. So what's the sheep syndrome?
You just follow everyone else.
Yeah, sort of follow. Where's Brent? Is Brent still here? Okay, Brent's sort of a guru.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good outdoor person. And so you decide you want to go on a little ski tour, and you follow Brent. So you know, follow behind Brent. Well, Brent's been there 100 times before, and sometimes, and he's very complacent. He's been there so many times that, you know, it's so routine, and he might miss something that you pick up. So what's your name?
Ingrid.
Ingrid. So, but Ingrid, you know, she's a new person. No one's ever in the group. She's never been with the group before. So she's reluctant to speak up. And you could get in trouble because complacency or familiarity breeds complacency. Ingrid picked something up. She's reluctant to say anything because of all these other macho people with her, and people have been killed because of that. So everyone needs to speak up in any group. Everyone works as a team. Everyone speaks up. Don't feel bad about being wrong, but speak up. Because Ingrid, because she's new, things are new, she's looking at things maybe more carefully than Brenda's. Are you following me? An example might be professor here, and some when he's not teaching. Where do you live?
700 College Drive.
Okay. 700 College Drive. So, and I'm gonna go. You've invited me to visit you.
Okay.
So, but I'm gonna come there separately. You go home to 700 College Drive. You go right to it. Me, and I'm looking at street signs, looking at road signs, looking at building numbers. I'm probably going to see things that you haven't seen in years. Again, the sheep syndrome. Everyone's looking, everyone's watching. And there's various handouts here. You can look at them. I can talk about them at some point. But one of the handouts is a checklist. It's on a pretty small card. If some of you have trouble reading this, I got it. Checklists are very important. And maybe you use checklists around here, but pilots use checklists. I have a friend that's a captain, Horizon Airline, a local service airline here in the Northwest, and I asked him, how many checklists do you go through between leaving Portland and arriving in Seattle? He goes through 13 different checklists. Is the landing gear down? You know, pretty important. But again, flying is very routine, and they get, you know, just everything's so familiar, they go through these checklists. Physicians now use checklists. Is it the right arm or the left arm that we're going to amputate? Pretty important. So, I have a strong belief in checklists. And this checklist is an avalanche safety checklist, things to do before you leave, things to do once you're in the area, travel, as you travel, things to check on if you get caught, and rescue. So lots of little hints on what to look for. Okay. Another syndrome we should avoid is the horse syndrome. So what's the horse syndrome?
Just keep going.
What?
Getting distracted?
No.
Coming into a blinders on?
It's your...
Situational awareness?
What do horses do at the end of the day?
Run home.
Head for the barn. This case here, you're going to head for the village. So a lot of times, you've been out all day, ski touring or snowshoeing, and you decide it's time to go back. I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm wet, I'm tired, and quite often you might take a shortcut that's more dangerous. Now you're going the longer way, which is safer. So another syndrome we should avoid is the lion syndrome. So what's that?
Making loud noises.
Well, that's the other way. It's sort of a male thing. You know, pride, ego, go for it, summit fever attitude. They gotta get to the summit no matter what. I always tell women when they're skiing with the boys, be cautious. Okay. Are you following? Okay. And then of course there's the not me syndrome. It's always the other person that's going to get in trouble. I heard an analysis about texting, and I know you don't do any texting here. I don't think. This was a national study where they're talking about many states now have laws against driving while on your cell phone or texting while on cell phone. Well, they did this analysis and they talked to a lot of people that text while they're driving, and the people, they said, oh, no problem for me, it's the other people I need to worry about. So, you know, it's always the other person. And finally, and we might have someone that fits in the room, the YMIS syndrome. So what's that? YMIS.
Young men in stress.
What?
Young men in stress.
What? Yeah, I mumbled young men in stress, but it's just a blank.
You're pretty close.
Young men in
situations. It's
youthful males.
The young males immortality syndrome. Well, these people go from feeling invincible to feeling immortal. Alright. Now, a lot of these things I just talked about apply to across the board. Not just, it could apply to hiking in the summer here. Okay, some avalanche percentages that we need to think about. 90% of those people that die in avalanches, either they or someone in the party triggers the avalanche. So most cases it's the victim that triggers the avalanche that they die in. Being picked off is only 10%. Now here, at Holden Village, the percentage is a little higher. You can get picked off fairly easily here at Holden Village. I'm just going between here and the lake. You can be picked off. Because of these avalanche paths that come down either side of the village or the roof avalanches. In 90% of the incidents, There's human error. There's the human factor supply, and I've talked quite a bit about human, the human factors. 90% of avalanche accidents occur in the backcountry. So, right close to here. 80 to 90%, now this is a really important clue, 80 to 90% of avalanches occur during storms and the first 12 to 24 hours after the storm. So, this is pretty much applicable to the maritime climates, which we're in. If you get into further east in Colorado, Montana, Utah, continental climates, the danger can persist longer. But here, the danger pretty well, the snowpack begins to settle and stabilize pretty much, you know, 12 to 24 hours after the storm. And this is gonna hurt, 64% of the incidents, accidents occur on blue sky days. So why?
Soft snow.
Snow's melting.
What?
Soft snow, it's melting out.
Gets heavy.
A layer between layers, no?
Well, you're...
More people are out?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all, what everyone said is right, but first nice sunny day here in the Northwest, everyone wants to go out, and it's still within that 12 to 24 hours. 70% of those buried will die. So don't, so, moral?
Don't get buried.
86% of those found within 15 minutes are alive. So? Make sure your partners know how to find you and you're carrying the equipment. Now, 75% of the victims have had some training. They think they know more than they do. Don't consider what you're having here as training. In fact, when you leave this room, you'll really know nothing. I don't want you to think, yeah, because just leave. But, you know, I don't want you to think when you leave this room that you know a lot about avalanches. Really, you need about a 25 to 30 hour course, so it's classroom and field. 75% of the victims die from asphyxiation, breathing their own carbon dioxide. Really, actually, what we're talking about, if you see this, the rule of threes, you can live, the only rule or three we're really talking about here is the first one. You can only live 3 minutes without oxygen. 25% of the victims die from trauma. That is, they get caught in the avalanche and they're thrown off of a cliff or through trees. And they aren't buried, but they're injured or killed by trauma. And I missed a couple percentage points. About 2% live long enough to die from hypothermia. Okay. Let's see. I'm sure you interrupt me, there's something you don't understand. I represent the Northwest Weather and Avalanche Center, which I helped get started in the middle 70s. And it's three forecasters are forecasting from the Canadian border all the way down to Mount Hood in Oregon. There's only one forecaster working at a time. You can get the the mountain weather and avalanche forecast right here. It's printed out and put up on the billboard. I also represent the Friends organization, which is a nonprofit organization that helps keep this, the avalanche center alive. Again, this is Avalanche Awareness 101, our practice safe snow. Again, it's extremely basic. And a little bit about the photographs. I photographed all, pretty much taken all the pictures that are in the presentation one way or another. In this case, I wasn't at Mount Baker in 1938 when these two women set out on the slopes, but I thought they were really pretty cool. They had heavy-duty wool clothing, heavy-duty equipment, but what caught me were their eyes. And I don't know, how many of you go snowshoeing? So quite a few. Well, you probably look at the snow with snowshoer's eyes, right? How many of you go cross-country skiing? So yeah, again, probably you're looking at the snow with cross-country skier's eyes. Anyone else doing anything else? You have snowboards here? Anyone have snowboards? So you're probably looking at the snow with the slider's eyes, right? Okay. What I'm going to try to do is develop your avalanche eyes. So remember their eyes. Okay. Again, we're out there doing all kinds of. We've got snowshoers here, and we have cross-country skiers. We've got some snowboarders. Anyone a mountaineer here? A climber? Any climbers? No. Okay. And today, there's a lot more of us out there than there used to be. I don't know about here at Holden Village, but I don't know about history. Are there more people that come visit Holden Village to go out skiing or snowshoeing than there used to be?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So there's more of us out here than there used to be. Actually, I copied this off of a Swiss calendar. It was some kind of Nordic event. It was in the Engadine Valley near St. Moritz, Switzerland. Anyhow, some of these folks are getting off the flat ground and getting out onto the steeper slopes. Now here at Holden, a lot of you probably don't go out on the steep slopes. You just go up Railroad Creek. It's flat. But you need to be concerned because you could be in the 10% group of being picked off by an avalanche and exposing yourself to snow avalanches. Now, this was a huge avalanche event that occurred a number of years ago on the south side of Mount St. Helens after it erupted. The entire winter's supply of snow that accumulated in the Shoestring Glacier slid out. And this mass of snow is about 2 miles long. There was chunks of snow as big as an automobile. You see my ski poles and pack. And the back side of this mass of snow was as high as a three-story building. But 42% of avalanche victims die in avalanches that have run 300 feet or less. So small avalanches can be as deadly as the very large ones. And a lot of people I talk to say, oh, snow soft and fluffy. I'm sure the people that shovel snow here found out it isn't always soft and fluffy. But a lot of people, how can snow hurt you? Well, when it comes down in an avalanche, it's developing a lot of heat and it can be very powerful. This was a Volkswagen Bug, an old Bug, that was crushed by an avalanche. It was in a parking lot. The Bug was in the parking lot. The avalanche came down through the parking lot. It can rip trees off the tree trunks. And this is sort of my favorite photo. This is a chunk of half-inch plywood, and his fur limb was shoved right through it. So you have a little bit of a feeling of the forces involved. And avalanche c- kill people. Willie Unsold, he was the husband of a former governor of the state of Washington. And he was a well-known mountaineer. He climbed all over the world. And it was in 1972 or 79, he died in an avalanche on Mount Rainier. So avalanches kill people. You can see, these are statistics of avalanche accidents that have occurred since 1950 to this past season. You see the snowmobilers lead the pack. Ski tours are number two and climbers number three. This year we've already had 4 fatalities, 2 snowmobilers, 1 cross-country skier, and 1 snowboarder have died. The snowmobilers, they have a favorite sport they call high marking. They see whose sled could get higher up on the slope. So they get up into the starting zones and they release the avalanche. Or they get stuck up there, they call their buddy up, and they double the stress on the snowpack. So, getting back to the checklist, there's some things you should do before you leave. You can check the forecast, the mountain weather and avalanche forecast are posted on the board. You check out so people know that you've gone. You say when you're going to get back. You check the forecast. They write, you update every day the trails, whether they're high danger, moderate, or low, right? Correct?
Yes.
And also, I think it'd be well not to go alone. Also, I think it'd be well if your friend of yours is staying here, let your friend know that you're going out in case something falls between the chairs. I always try to let someone know where I'm going and when I expect to be back. Good to get a little bit of information about the area you're going to. And then check out the group. If you're going to go with a group of people, are they people that you feel comfortable with? Or do you have one of those macho males in the group? I'd rather have Ingrid, because I think she'd pick out things. But anyhow, so good to check out the group. And then there's things to do along the way. As you're here, you don't even have to travel very far. You can look at conditions right around the village. And you can look at the ridge tops. Is the snow being transported? Are plumes of snow being blown off the ridge tops? What side of the ridge are they being deposited on? What type of snow is falling here at the village? There's all kinds of clues of things to look at right before you even leave the village. And then once you're out there, there's some little things you should check. How steep is the slope? We're going to get into that. There's a bunch of little tests you can do with a shovel. Anyhow, we'll explain all these, but these are all items that are on that yellow checklist. Okay. We're going to look at terrain, determine what kind of terrain we need to be concerned about. We're going to put snow on that terrain, and then we're going to see how weather changes it. And then the human factor affects all aspects of it. And we're going to talk more about that. Okay, the human factor. You could have a whole presentation about the human factor. And I'm just going to cover a few human factor points. So it's a sunny day, beautiful sunny day here. It makes us really feel good. At least here in the Northwest, we don't see too many sunny days in the winter, so we get all excited and really feel good. We get into trouble when the snowpack doesn't share those opinions, our opinions. Cold and wet makes us feel gloomy. And we tend to cut corners. Like I said earlier, the other safer route is too long, so we take the quicker route that's not as safe. People highly experienced in a sport, you know, whether it's snowshoeing, snowboarding, or cross-country skiing, tend to overestimate their avalanche skills. And as humans, we tend to filter information so that it tells us what we want to hear. Have you heard that before? You know? So you're out there, beautiful sunny day, you read the forecast, low avalanche danger, so there's some slopes you're going to do some telemark turns on. Well, you see some things out there that bother you, but you ignore them because you want to ski that slope. You know, have you ever been in a situation where you see some things that bother you, but you ignore them because you want to have fun? Yeah? Okay. As something becomes more familiar, we tend to notice it less. You know, going back to Brent, you know, he's been there so many times before, it's so familiar, we ignore things that anger picks up. More information does not mean a better decision. I think it's really important in any group to encourage minority opinions. And I think, I'm not picking on Anger, she might be much more experienced outdoors than I am, but let's say Ingrid is the least experienced in the group, but she sees something that bothers her. I think I'm going to turn the group around. There's always another day. If something bothers Ingrid, we're going to turn around. Okay? I think some of you are going to say, well, she, jerk, me. But, you know, there's always another day. Back to this, people tend to ignore information that does not confirm their own optimistic scenarios. Worse yet, we look for clues to confirm our opinion and ignore those that do not. In like I mentioned earlier, in many of the avalanche accidents, the main reason for incident happening was related to human factors. Okay. So we're going to look at terrain. Is this terrain we need to be concerned about as far as avalanche?
No.
I mean, there's other dangers there, but the possibility of avalanches occurring on a steep slope like this are pretty rare because the snow constantly sloughs. Okay? So the slopes we need to be concerned about are slopes between 30 and 45 degrees. The optimum steepness for avalanche release is 38 degrees. About the steepness of an average staircase. So if you have a staircase in your home, that steepness of that staircase is optimum for avalanche release. So, I like to put numbers on the slope. I don't like to guess. Now, granted, you don't use cell phones here, but there are some things in cell phones that you don't need to have access to a cell tower, like a clinometer. So, this is what, you can put this apps into your cell phone, if you have a cell phone, and you've got a very inexpensive clinometer. Okay? Or, you can use your ski poles. So I need someone to be a snow slope for me. Okay, Professor. Okay, your slope. So what's your name?
Flax.
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 Yep.
Well, it's not as interesting as Mr. M.
Yep.
Okay, so. Okay, slope down a little bit. Okay, so the vertical ski pole is right at the toe of the slope. And so this is about a 45 degree slope. Mm-hmm. Got it?
Flax, could you stand on the other side?
Oh, let's turn so we can see. So a 45 degree slope. Drop it down 3/4 of the way up. Slope go down. That's about a 37 degree slope. So that's about the steepness of a slope you need to be concerned about as far as avalanches. Drop it some more. Halfway on the ski pole is a 27 degree slope. So that's below the danger here. Follow? So if you got ski poles, very easy way to figure steepness of slope. Okay. We thank you, slope, you get a little prize. A little whistle.
Oh, thank you.
So it's a very simple way to figure out steepness of slope. It's important to put numbers on the slope. Don't guess. And there's other things you can get. There's one of the 10 essentials to carry in the mountains is a compass. You can buy compasses that have clinometer built in as well, so you can use your compass to figure steepness of slope. There's clinometers you can buy, they're more expensive. Again, everyone is carrying cell phones these days, and there's several different apps for clinometers that you can put on your cell phone. Okay. So, I need for you to tell me, and you've probably got a lot of information now that you can tell me. I'd like to have your feeling of what you think the profile of a typical avalanche victim is.
It's probably
male.
Male. Good. 21. Now a little older.
Under 30.
Yeah, around 30. It varies. It varies from year to year, depending who the victims are. If most of the victims have been snowmobilers, they tend to be an older group. So it brings up the average age. If they're snowboarders, it brings down the age. So yeah, figure 30. So 30-year-old male, we have a 30-year-old male in the room.
Very good, they're so conditional.
32.
Anyone closer?
20.
32 is closer than 20.
She's the closest?
Yeah.
So what's your name?
Ryan.
Ryan. I have trouble remembering names. Will you remember Ryan's name for me?
Brian.
Brian.
Brian with the
Brian.
Got
it. Will you remember? See, I can't even get it. Thank you. Okay, so, you know, pretty obvious we aren't going to go up these gullies in the middle of winter. It's probably up here, it's steeper than 30 to 45 degrees, but I'd probably go up through the trees, but...
Brian.
Brian. I said, Mr. M, you know, it's the safest, the avalanche has slid, it's the safest spot to go.
Yeah.
Right? What Brian doesn't realize is that forks up here. One fork has slid, the other one's waiting for Brian. Okay. This is an interesting spot. Some of you maybe have driven by here. This is Highway 2 on the west side of the Stevens Pass Highway. Stevens Pass ski area is just up the road. You looked across, you could see the old snow shed. This is the spot, just off the photo, where the worst avalanche disaster ever to happen occurred back in 1910, where you probably, some of you may have read about it, where the railroad train got stopped by an avalanche.
Yeah.
Another avalanche hit the train, and 96 people were killed. After that, they built the snow shed. They had a lot of problems with icing in the snow shed, and eventually they built an 11-mile tunnel underneath Stevens Pass, so if you ever taken the train, you've been through that new tunnel, well, relatively new. Okay? Also, there's anchors that are on the snow slopes. Trees are good anchors. Where there aren't anchors, you only need a few inches of snow or a foot of snow and you have avalanche concerns. But where the trees are, you really don't have too many concerns for avalanches until the trees are completely covered, and then you have weak layers built above where the trees are. So the trees, rocks, boulders act as anchors on the slope. So here doesn't take, this is actually close. This is up near, up the head of a railroad creek. What's the lake up there?
Hart Lake.
The what?
Hart?
No, not Hart. Way up.
Lyman.
Lyman Lake, yeah, it's right. Right near Lyman Lake. So, this skier, actually released an avalanche, fell at this point, got up and survived, but he was very lucky. Most of us wouldn't be that lucky. Okay, a little bit about snow cover. There's essentially two types of snow avalanches. Loose snow avalanche and a slab avalanche. I should have gotten this ready earlier. What am I playing
Silly
with?
Silly Putty!
Silly Putty! A slab of snow in the mountains actually has the same very similar properties to Silly Putty. There's all kinds of built-in energy. And if you put moderate stress on it, it'll sort of stretch. And you've got good examples here of the overhangs in the buildings. So that snow that's hanging on the overhang is under moderate stress because gravity wants it to slide off the roof, and tension to the roof is holding it to the roof. So it's under moderate stress. But if we put sudden stress on it, like
Brian
jumping out onto that slope, and fracture.
Don't do it, Brian.
I've done a few of these over the years, and I was doing a presentation at REI, and the Brian there, in the middle of the presentation, walked out. He couldn't take it, so don't walk out. All right. So, here we have some typical examples of loose snow avalanches. And some people call them point avalanches because they sort of start as a point and grow larger. You've probably seen them here. They're relatively harmless unless there are terrain traps below. A terrain trap could be a creek, trees, like I said, you know, a lot of fatalities are people have carried through by an avalanche through trees. Well, a little slough like this could carry you through the trees, or it could throw you off the edge of a cliff. There was a case of an avalanche fatality not too far from here, down near Cleom, Washington, near, not too far from Ellensburg, where two snowshoers were out. I think they were husband and wife. A little slough like this took the husband and put him into a creek, and then it piled on top of him, and he died. Just very small avalanche. So they need to be watched as well, depending upon what the terrain traps are below you. These are the scary ones. These are where a whole mass of snow releases at once. This case, we knew what the conditions were. We knew this was a lee slope, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit. We knew we'd had significant snowfall overnight. We knew there was a weak layer in the snowpack. We skied to this point and put enough stress on the slope that it released. But if we hadn't known, been perfect slope to do a few telemark turns on, or just crossing it, we could have released the avalanche and be buried in the debris at the bottom. So, we're going to try to...
Is that you, Brian?
Explain very simply. We have the bed surface, which is what the slab slides on. We have a weak layer. There's various types of weak layers. One type of weak layer is surface hoar, and you see it here all the time. It's a little frost layer, crystals that sometimes you see on top of the snow, right outside the door. You've seen it there. Or it's at home where you have frost on your windshield or your car or on your lawn. That's surface hoar. You need clear, still night, no wind for that to occur. As most of the fatal accidents here in the maritime climates of the Cascades are the result of surface hoar. There's other types of weak layers. A storm of very low density snow, so you have the bed surface, then you have a storm about 6 to 8 inches of low density snow, and then it continues to snow on top of that low density snow, but it's more dense snow, or it could be maybe very wet snow. The weakness in the snowpack is that low density snow, very dry snow, like you get maybe in the Midwest, or in the, and sometimes we get it here. It could be a rain crust. It could be a sun crust. There's a lot of different types of weak layers. And we'll talk more about that as well. Follow? Are you following?
Mm-hmm.
So, all it took was for
Brian
to get out on that slope. But maybe it's not Brian. It could be additional snow that could cause the release. It could be a wildlife, or it could be a chunk of snow falling off a tree that could put stress on the slope to cause the avalanche release. Thousands of avalanches released in the Cascades every winter. And it could be just additional snow that puts the stress on the snowpack for the avalanche to release. Are you following?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But not like sheep.
Hmm?
But not like sheep.
Not yes. like sheep. Okay. Snowflakes fall, they're the beautiful stellars that we see. Once they fall onto the snow, they begin to begin the round, and then they connect and they build strength. So as after the storm, the snowpack begins to strengthen, and that's the strengthening process that we see here. It weakens again if the sun comes out and starts to melt. The connection between those granules, the snowpack weakens, but then it can strengthen again overnight by refreezing. So these processes are going on constantly. And it's your job to figure out what's happening with the help of the Avalanche Center and the forecasts that are produced. So, the weather helps change. And there's lots of clues that the weather produces that we need to help be recognized when we're out there. And there's always weather.
That's good to dish to you. It's not.
Sure, like
this.
This is Natalie.
Okay.
Yes.
A little bit. This is the product that you can check on when you go home. There's little red cards here that give the website of the Avalanche Center. It's nwac.us. The village prints out the forecast every day and posts it. And they pick out, this is the mountain area you're in. There'll be a different forecast, a separate forecast for each mountain area. It's both a mountain weather forecast and an avalanche forecast. You go to this website, there's all kinds of other types of information you can get as well. One of the products are produced for each mountain area is this danger rose. And it's interesting in that it tells you, see, it's this red, so it means high danger on all aspects at these elevations. Are you understanding? Mm-hmm. It's a contour, elevation contours. So this is telling you that it's dangerous at all exposures. Here is the actual forecast, and it just says that from northwest to northeast slopes, at these elevations is where avalanche danger is high.
Is that northwest or northeast facing slopes?
Yes.
Okay.
And on the west, south, and east facing slopes, it's moderate danger. But again, most of the accidents occur at moderate and considerable avalanche danger. Up here, people see that and they decide not to go. So most of the fatal accidents in the United States occur at moderate and considerable avalanche danger. So if you go out, there's, yes?
So do you ever have like a zero, or is that just summer?
Pretty much winter.
But zero, yep. Zero avalanche danger. Zero? But just summer, is it always a low avalanche if it's winter and there's snow?
I would say anytime there's snow out there, it's always low. There could be never zero.
Okay.
Even in the middle of summer.
Still have some.
Yeah, you know, there's slopes on mountains,
sure.
On the peaks, they're snow covered year round.
Yep.
And you can have new snow occur in the summer. And it's even more of concern because as soon as the storm goes by, solar radiation is so much stronger in the summer, and it will affect that new snow very rapidly, and it's even more dangerous. I would say it's never zero. Never zero. So we follow.
Are there seasons, like is avalanche risk higher in the spring when things are starting to melt? Does that, or is it pretty much the year process you?
I don't think there's any seasons where it's higher, you know, other than the summer, mm-hmm. It's lower.
Mm-hmm.
I would think even in the beginning of the winter, the chances are less because there's less accumulation, but still the danger could be there. Quite often, most of our accidents here in the Northwest occur in December, early in the season. And then later on, things stabilize somewhat. So I don't think there's any, other than the middle of summer, I don't think there's any seasonal differences. It just depends on what Mother Nature has provided us. When you look at this, you see this arrow, and that means danger is increasing, is in going up, and if the arrow is pointing the other direction, the danger is lower. And then if there's a warning, a specific warning, which would be in these areas, the warning would be in the text. So, are you following?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, another, you have that information if you're fortunate to have be able to have the forecast. But then, there's a lot of things to look at when you're out there on the mountains. And windward lure. This is the windward side of the ridge. This is the leeward side. Windward, leeward, follow? Okay? In most situations, the windward side is the safer side. The lee side is the more dangerous side because this is where the snow is transported during a storm. The wind picks up the newly fallen snow and deposits it on the lee slope. And you have much more accumulation on the lee side than you do the windward side because the wind keeps the windward side clean. So these are the areas you need to be concerned about. So it's important when you're out there to try to determine windward lure. Okay? There's different scenarios here. And so we'll go out real life. This is on the south side of Mount Hood, White River Canyon. The summit of Mount Hood is here. If you've ever been to the Timberline Lodge, it's right over the ridge here. You can see where the typical lee slopes are because here's where the cornices are, where there's been avalanche release. These are typical lee slopes. They're northeast facing slopes. But on this particular day, we had offshore flow, we had east winds that were picking up the snow on what was formerly the lee slope and putting it onto what was formerly the windward slope. Mm-hmm. So, you know, familiarity, it isn't always the same. Okay. no avalanche concern here, it's flat, here at the village, maybe. But there's some clues of which way the wind was blowing during the storm. And so, which way was it blowing? Was it blowing from this direction to that direction, or from this direction to that direction? From right to left?
Yeah.
Everyone agree? No?
I think it's coming from behind the kid's head towards us.
Coming this way?
Towards us.
Towards us.
Along the shadow line.
Towards this way?
Yeah.
Well, the right to left were right. It was blowing from this direction, and see, there's a stump here. And it forms a little eddy, and then forms this, I call these flags. I think the meteorologists, Weather Service meteorologists, call them snow scoops or something like that. I call them flags, because the flag tells me, these are a super clue. When you're out there, you can see these flags, and it'll right away tell you which way the wind was blowing during the storm. It points away from the direction of the wind was blowing. We'll see another example a little later. Okay? So, now there's no snow here, but temperatures were below freezing, and that's huckleberry brush, it's about a foot high. And we had super cool moisture, fog, clouds are blowing through on this mountain peak. So which way was the wind blowing?
Left to right.
Right to left?
Left to right.
Oh, what? Left to right?
Yeah.
Everyone agree, left to right?
Yeah, yes.
It would accumulate on the side the stuff was blowing. It would accumulate on the side exposed to the moisture, wouldn't it?
No.
Okay.
No, it's blown off. And
the wind was blowing right to left. This is Ryan ice. And again, this maritime climate, this is a super clue to figure out wind direction, because we have lots of rime ice. So, super cool moisture, fog, clouds, accumulates and grows on the twig towards the direction from which the wind is coming from. So it starts to accumulate on the twig or the tree trunk and grows towards the direction from which the wind is blowing. It's typical of icing on airplane wings. So the airplane is flying through super cool moisture, a cloud, and the ice forms in the front of the wing. That's why they have de-icing equipment on the front of the wing. Same process, but in this case, the wing is standing still, and the wind is blowing. Follow? This, you'll see lots of rime ice out there, and it's just a wonderful clue for figuring out wind direction. Sorry. Yes.
So one of them was a stump, and one of them is a twig, and they're both vertical. And one of them, the flag, points in the direction of the wind, and one of them points against.
Okay. In this case, there's no rime ice. There's no rime ice here.
All right.
This is just transporting snow. All I'm trying to do is give you some clues, some things to look at when you're out there. These are separate clues, have nothing to do with each other. Well, is that clear?
Yes.
There's no rime ice there.
So this was, wind was just blowing the snow and forming this flag out here. And in this case, this is rime ice. Completely different, but they're both good clues to look at. And I know they're conflict a little bit, but they're different processes. Are you following? Professor, am I?
You very well, thank you. Deposition of the ice crystals, absolutely.
Okay. real life. Have any of you climbed Mount St. Helens?
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, cool. And you went up Center Direction?
It was summer.
Yeah, summer.
Yeah.
And you went up?
After the eruption.
You went from the climber's bivouac?
Yeah.
And so you probably went up Monitor Ridge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, hey, there wasn't any snow.
Well, in the spring, there's snow. And this is typical, the routes that people climb. They go from where you went in the climber's bivouac, there's a trail, and then you go out onto the slope, and you go up this ridge. And typically in the spring, people climb and they ski down or snowboard down. And I can't tell you which side of that ridge is the safe side that skiers or slide down. It just depends where the snow was deposited during the storm. In this case, this is running sort of north, Monitor Ridge is sort of running north and south. So this is the east side, this is the west side. I think in this case, the storm came through, the front came through. Once the front came through, the wind shifted around to the west. So most of the snow was deposited on the west wind on the east side of the ridge. So that was the lee slope. It could be the opposite side. You just got to try to figure out where the snow was deposited during the storm. Someone's going to get caught here sooner or later. Okay, we're going to get into equipment, but I'm going to sort of end here. I'll explain a little bit about the handouts, but I know some people have kitchen duties. And tomorrow we'll start off with equipment, things to carry with you. I have, like I said, different handouts. One is this yellow checklist, and another one is this blue sheet, which has about three very simple tests you can do, very simple, quick tests you can do with your ski pole or ski. And another one's a little hand shear test. The card, sort of hotline card, has the phone numbers and the website for the Northwest Weather and Avalanche Center. I guess if you don't live in this part of the country, you don't need the card. But it would be interesting to go to that website. On the back side are those danger levels that we saw on the photo. This yellow sheet is knowing when to dig. There's three different quick tests, and we'll demonstrate them in the classroom. I'll need someone tomorrow to be a snow column, and then we'll perform tests on that person. This describes these three different quick tests you can do. A little avalanche safety folder, again, has those danger levels on it. These danger levels have had various discussion over the years and recently changed. It took 5 years for a committee of people, a few people from the U.S. and Canada, to finally establish these danger levels and text to go with it. Another one, you should really read this. It's a little write-up about the human factors, and gets in a little more detail than I did. This shows that test way to figure out with your ski pole. So, any questions?
Is there going to be a movie tonight?
Oh, we're going to do the film, Brent?
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you, so there's a 30-minute movie that he's got up there. He can talk a little bit about it. We'll figure out at dinner time what time will work. We'll announce that, but I think
this is
well worth doing.
This film is called A Dozen More Turns.
Thank you, sir.
And it's pretty heavy. So, if you have a little tough time with looking at some injuries and things, maybe you better not show. It's very heavy. But it's about a group of people, a group of guys.
Yes.
They went backcountry skiing near Bozeman. And they're very experienced in avalanche safety. In fact, one of them did his graduate work in snow avalanche safety at Montana State. But there was an emotional draw to ski the powder snow, and they kept going further and further up the slope, and every time they skied down, they got more and more stoked about it. And unfortunately, the pursuit of powder ended up the graduate student that got killed, and then one of the other fellow lost a leg. So it's very good, and what it shows you is, again, the draw of that human factor. It's something that I can't explain. Maybe we need someone that's much better at explaining things than I am. I can, but there's human factors that affect us that sometimes we just don't seem to have control. And these people were super experienced, and that the draw of that powder skiing overcame them. So that's what a dozen more turns is about. I think there's some good lessons to be learned by seeing. Okay. Any other questions? Well, we don't know what time yet. The film. Okay. If you're looking for a book to read about snow safety, probably one of the better publications is Snow Sense, and another one is the ABCs of Avalanche Safety. Snow Sense is in your library, and so is ABCs of Avalanche Safety, but there's a new edition of Snow Sense, the fifth edition, just came out, and I'm going to donate a copy for your library, so you'll have both, but very excellent publications. And there's not an awful lot out there. So Snow Sense, the ABCs of Avalanche Safety, a Canadian publication, Backcountry Avalanche Awareness, are probably the three, in my opinion, three best publications. And we have them all here at the Village. Okay, thank you very much.